Hey everyone, and welcome to this, a Risky Business Soapbox edition. I'm Patrick Gray. There is no weekly show this week. I am on a beach somewhere tropical right now, and I prepared this one before I left so we'd have something to run while I'm away. The Soapbox is one of our wholly sponsored podcasts here at Risky Biz HQ. Vendors pay to participate. They pay to come on to talk about what's on their mind. And this week we've got Silence's very own Chris Sestito joining us. He heads threat research for Silence, the AV company. And Silence is a relatively new company. They've been around for about 6 years now. And regular listeners would have heard me credit them for almost single-handedly shaking up the AV industry. They built a machine learning model for detecting malware that was effective enough to actually challenge the incumbents, who until then had a stranglehold on the market and weren't exactly dedicated to innovating. Silence's fortunes rose further when it played an instrumental part in detecting and cleaning up malware used against the US Office of Personnel Management, or OPM. That was a big moment, because from there it seemed like all of a sudden everyone was a machine learning company. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast are sick to death of hearing pitches from vendors about machine learning, in fact. But the thing is, Silence was built on machine learning, and they are still 100% 24-karat true believers. Chris Sestito joined me to talk about a few things. He joined me to talk about driving machine learning model development with threat research, also about dodgy machine learning marketing, and more. And here's what he had to say. I hope you enjoy it.
We are absolutely the true believers that machine learning and artificial intelligence are the best approaches to very complex problems. And, you know, as far as the, you know, hype around marketing, you know, I think that there are some out there that really try and leverage the marketing power behind terms like artificial intelligence or machine learning, and that does go on. You know, I can tell you from experience here that this is a real tool, and it is absolutely the most powerful tool we've got. That's why I think we feel that needs to be the bulk of any real solution anytime there's a lot of data involved.
Yeah. So like when Silence first popped up on the scene, it was like, yeah, machine learning based classification, which makes a lot of sense, right? And, you know, there's even been PhDs on applying machine learning to classification of malware in families, like Dr. Silvio Cesare. That was his PhD here in Australia. So, you know, it was an obvious, well, I'm not going to say obvious, that's like sort of, you know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, the completely obvious thing to do to productize that, but that is what Silence did. And sure. It has been tremendously successful. But now you talk to any AV company and they're all doing machine learning. And, you know, I sort of wonder from a marketing point of view, what that's done for Silence now that everyone's saying, oh, we do that too. Because, you know, I kind of think, okay, maybe you're doing a little bit of machine learning to augment some of your manual analysis, but you're not doing it to the same level. And it's impossible for buyers to understand that, right?
Yeah, you bring up an important distinction there. I mean, if you are a company that uses signatures or heuristics or any other solutions out there, and you augment it or supplement it with a machine learning model, then yeah, you can technically claim that you're using machine learning. But for Silence, machine learning is our solution, and we understand why it's successful. And it's not just in security. I mean, we really refer to ourselves as an artificial intelligence company, because if you look at any, you know, major advancements across successful companies or successful solutions for many problems out in the world today globally, you'll see artificial intelligence and machine learning leveraged heavily. In fact, security by no means is leading the charge. When you look at the most advanced machine learning that's kind of in play today, you're looking at things like market analytics, things like self-driving cars, search engine optimization. I mean, that's really those are kind of the areas where the most resources have been applied and the most.
Don't forget murder robots for the defense
murder
department.
Robots,
yeah. So how do we separate the good machine learning models from the bad ones? I'm guessing as a purchaser of, you know, a malware classifier, it's going to be nigh on impossible for the average CISO to really sit down and extract meaningful information from these vendors. But I'm still curious to know, like, what you feel a good ML model is versus a bad one, right, when it comes to malware classification.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's absolutely a difference. I mean, in less time than you and I are going to talk today, we could sit down, hand select a dozen features, write about 10 lines of Python code, and we would have ourselves a model, and it would be terrible. And then we'd be able to claim that we were working with machine learning. But that's not really something that you would want to pursue as your security solution. You want to have a mature model. And there's a concept of generational models that really are, feature rich. They're expansive in what they can understand. That the training sets are very well representative of the real world. There's a lot to go into making a good machine learning model. Whereas I think a lot of users in the industry just think of machine learning as kind of a blanket item. And they think either, that's something that I don't understand or I'm never going to understand or I don't want to understand. So it's all even. They either use it or they don't. And that's really not the case. It can be used the right way and make excellent decisions and provide, this amazing accuracy we see in detections of malware now. But that's due to a real curation process and not just kind of appending it to what we've always been doing.
Well, I think, there are certainly cases in the malware, anti-malware space where marketing has come down to engineering and said, look, you need to do some form of machine learning so that we can tell people that we use machine learning. And they might, as you say, they might just add a very tiny, weak model to augment one manual process and bang, hey, we use machine learning too. And the crazy thing is, that's not to say that their approach, absent the machine learning, isn't effective as well, right? Like Silence isn't the only effective anti-malware software, but it is certainly the one that makes the most use of ML. It's just crazy, like the way that one small startup, you guys, sort of popped up and really changed the messaging for everyone. I can imagine it would be very frustrating for some of the incumbents.
Sure. I think it's, as you mentioned, the use of machine learning and the scenario you described, I could certainly believe has happened out there. I think when people feel like they're second or third to the game, that, it becomes more of a desperation move. They're looking to the future and you want to create a model that can understand threats that haven't even been authored yet. That the only way to reach those results are through machine learning, and or at least the only way we've discovered so far. And so it's it really is a solution that we can look forward to scaling, and because of that, it's very obvious to us that it's the best solution.
The whole topic that we're going to speak about today is really more to do with taking threat research and then using that to drive the development of your machine learning model, right? And I'm just curious what that process looks like because, depending on who you talk to, training a machine learning model for malware classification might be as simple as just throwing samples into a directory and feeding them to the model, but it's not actually that simple, is it?
No, not at all. Now, a very, very important consideration when you're leveraging machine learning models is those training sets. They have to be accurate and they have to be a good representation of the real world samples that you're going to put in front of that model. And that's kind of step one. If you are not training with accurate labels, which is a bigger problem than many people think, if you look at security feeds that exist throughout security in general, there are a lot of kind of fuzzy feeds that can include some malware for positive feeds and vice versa. There's it's hard to nail down sets that are 100% accurate that you can confidently say, I'm willing to train my machine learning model on this set in order to provide accurate results. So that's a big piece of it as well. It's just making sure that you're working with well-labeled data that's representative of the data you're going to come across in a model.
When you say well-labeled, what do you mean by that? I mean, do you need to actually feed some sort of additional information to the classifier so that it knows things about these characteristics and then can associate these characteristics with things that you've like manually tagged on the sample? Like how does that process work?
That's a great question because in security, specifically in antivirus, we have always considered labeling to be a little more simple than it really should be. And when you're talking about using a signature solution, that's okay. Your labels can be good and bad, and you can use a single label system to associate one threat with one label. But in machine learning, labeling can it can be a better solution than that. You can label things like what type of malware it is, and you can start tagging and associating real functionality with a threat, which is more meaningful and more usable when you understand that there's really only a finite amount of things that malware is trying to do, whether it's steal, information that could provide something lucrative, whether it's ransoming your box, whether it's sitting and listening on your system. Most of the time, the goals are very similar, and it's that functionality that we can tie back to threats that we really consider significant.
But I guess my question is more like, you know, do you pull down a sample, do some manual analysis, and then tell the model, hey, these are the things in this sample you need to be spotting, and similar functionality in other samples? I mean, where's the line between, you know, automatically just feeding it binaries versus, you know, or, you know, things that are going to unpack versus actually telling it what the thing that you're giving it is?
So that's the concept of supervised and unsupervised learning. And then a lot of models can be a semi-supervised learning. And that is exactly that. If you were to take 100 pictures of dogs and cats and you wanted to train your model, and you would take a subset of that and say, these are all dog pictures and these are all cat pictures, and then you'd want the model to be able to train the rest and label the rest. And that would be a supervised learning situation. Unsupervised learning is when you're going to allow the model to take a look at a large set of data and try and group it into like categories. So in the case of malware, we would have a large set of data and allow the model, based on the feature space that we give it, to make the determination of these files are very similar to each other and these files over here are very similar to each other. And based on what the model considers, those two groups are very different from each other.
So this is where I sort of come back to that question about the threat research and how you use the threat research to drive the development. I mean, is a lot of the, you know, the threat research that you do internally sort of used to do supervised learning of the model? I mean, is that the purpose of doing threat research on Silence's, you know, in Silence's offices?
it's absolutely used in the training of these models and the QA of the models. So when you have that human labeled data, So you have researchers performing analysis on these samples. You can increase the confidence in your model's decision. You can find weaknesses and where it may be wrong, because like any solution, there's going to be times where you have something that isn't correct. But yeah, absolutely. So we my team is primarily responsible for analysis associating context with them. So not just good or bad, but what kind of bad is this sample or is this threat? So yeah, we can take that data and we can take those more granular labels and we can tie it back to the machine and say, learn from this and use that data and that new information to make future decisions. And that's why the more you're doing this and the longer you're doing this and the more models you've iterated over through these learning platforms, the more accurate you're going to be.
Now, you just sort of hinted at it there, but the biggest problem with any AV is always going to be either a false positive or a false negative, right? And it doesn't matter whether you're using machine learning, it doesn't matter whether you're using heuristics, it doesn't matter. Whatever your approach, it's going to be the edge cases that cause you grief, right? So how do and the thing about machine learning is it's very good at most of it, right? Like, and I know that it's very, very good at most of it, but what do the edge cases look like? What are the sort of things that have historically caused trouble for machine learning models in malware classification?
Well, that's interesting because the machine learning areas where it might miss tend to be in those files that aren't very clearly one side or the other. When you start talking about those potentially unwanted programs that is the kind of the common label among vendors, when you have the nice piece about the misses is machine learning is very good at identifying samples it hasn't seen before. So when we see new threats or new types of malware out there, that's not usually where a model would miss.
I remember, I mean, Silvio's whole thing was really about looking at finding samples from a family that it knows about that mm-hmm. would look completely different to a typical AV scanner, but the ML model picks it very, very reliably. So new variants don't stand much of a chance against a machine learning model. And I guess what you're saying is it's that gray area software that causes you the most trouble, which makes sense, right? Because it causes trouble for people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at things like nearest neighbor search methods, which is a technique inside of machine learning, you would be able to look at files as compared to samples you've seen before. So we have a new sample in here that's unknown, but we can see that it's 99.9% similar or more to a file that we have been able to successfully label as a malicious family or something along those lines. We can then preempt that decision before anything is able to execute. And that's how we get a real prevention solution against files that we've never seen before.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that, you know, if you see a file for the first time that is trying to do all of those shady things, right, that's going to be easy to classify as well. But if you see something from the first time, I think I think when I was speaking to someone else from Silence, I mean, a great example they gave me of software that machine learning based models might have a hard time with, it's things like gaming software, right? That might have anti-cheat components that look kind of rootkitty in it. I mean, that's where things get complex, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Games are a good example of something that can be challenging due to its similarity to malicious software. So when you look at things like the anti-cheat software, when you see things like low-level hooking that games have to do, or having programs act like servers, or a lot of peer-to-peer communication on non-standard ports, that looks very suspect to a model. So the kind of the good piece there is that if you see enough games and you train them as you know, a benign piece of software, you would then be able to eventually have the model learn that distinction between the two. But especially with earlier models, that is definitely one area that can look suspect to a model.
So that brings up the question about bypassing, right? And to Silence's credit, every time I've interviewed someone from Silence, they say at no point will we ever claim that our software cannot be bypassed by a determined attacker who really wants to slide by us, right?
Sure.
But what does that look like when it's a machine learning based solution? Because your bypass techniques are going to be usually pretty different. What does it look like when you're trying to slide stuff past a machine learning model? And do you at Silence actually try to red team your own model and try to write malware to slide past it?
Absolutely. So, you know, what we refer to as a adversarial abuse of a model is something that's it's an important consideration. It's a little bit of a nuance to attackers as well. So, you know, we're never going to come out here and say that that, you know, nothing will ever be able to bypass us, because that's a great way to make sure that something will. You always have to actively pay attention to you know, potential weaknesses or potentially abused features of a model. That's one of the misconceptions that sometimes people always think more data in a training set or more features in a model is always going to be a better thing, but oftentimes more features could lead to a wider surface area for adversarial abuse. So these are definitely considerations we have both on the data science side and in the threat research side, and we absolutely will have our own kind of red teaming exercises where we make sure that we are able to protect against these different types of attacks or different types of abuses of the model.
Do you have anyone at Silence whose sole job it is to sit there and write previously unknown malware that is designed to do its best against your machine learning model? Because to me, that would seem like a job description that would be perfect for a company like yours. Well, for any AV company, really.
Sure.
But you know,
yeah. I mean, we on Threat Research, we have a team that we do dedicate to not just that, but it's certainly part of it. No one is completely dedicated to malware creation or anything like that. But it's certainly both from the red and blue side an important activity or important exercise to participate in, and we definitely devote resources to protection against that in a proactive means, right? We don't want to wait for anything that could exist to be found first on a customer. So, you know, we want to do everything we can ahead of time, and we do.
Now, I want to hear, and you know, I love talking about successes, but I also love to hear about failures, all right? And I want to hear some war stories now, and I want to hear about where the model has fallen down, where it hasn't worked, and what the lessons learned have been there. I mean, can you tell us about some of the bad surprises that your machine learning model has coughed up?
Oh yeah, like any solution that exists out there, there's going to be times where it wasn't perfect, and we've definitely experienced that in the past. You know, examples of tricky situations. You know, one that I can think of is you know, when we were dealing with a very well-known piece of malware, a very well-known piece of ransomware. We were wondering why we were missing on a certain type of or certain variations of it, and we found that it was because this specific or these specific files that were causing us trouble were wrapped in something that was never really used to protect malware. It was an installer that was used almost exclusively with legitimate files. So our model would have seen billions of files every time it had seen this legitimate packaging software. It had always associated it with something that was benign. So so in reality, even though the model was very able to identify the actual malicious piece of the software, when it was obfuscated by something that was almost always used to pack legitimate software, that became a little tricky and wasn't a 100% success rate. Keep in mind that that none of our customers were actually affected by this. This was something that we found through kind of a proactive testing. But that's an example.
So it was like some sort of obscure sample that you sort of dug up somewhere?
Exactly. Yeah, it was something that we try and get our hands on everything we can to test, and we want to make sure that we test it before it's being tested in a real world environment. And while we are strong in testing against files that we haven't seen before, we're never going to avoid testing of something we have access to.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because it is machine learning essentially is all about statistics, right? And if you've got, we've got enough samples out there, we've got enough bad stuff out there that you've got a really amazing data set where you can create a statistically driven model. But, then stuff like that is going to happen, right? So what do you do in that instance? Then it's like you're kind of overriding the model a little bit and saying no longer place this much trust in things wrapped in this, right? Is that the response?
Well, one of the great things about machine learning models is they'll tend to make that correction themselves. So those decisions behind how much weight to put on any individual feature is something that can be that can be a black box in a neural network.
But in this case, that didn't work, right?
When it's something like the scenario I just described, there are short-term solutions and long-term solutions, right? So once we then go back to that training stage and we say, okay, now that we've identified these, we can take a few of those samples and train the next iteration of our model, that there are files in existence that are wrapped with this hacker that are also malicious, then the model has now been exposed to it and trained to it, and we'll be able to make decisions on that type of file in the future. Whereas if you've never trained a model to understand something, it has no chance at understanding that is something that's good or bad, because it doesn't exist. So,
well, and I'm guessing it wouldn't have been obvious to you either that a step like that would make something slide past, right? And that's kind of gets you into that whole conversation about machine learning model interrogability and all of that, right?
Yeah, I think it's a scenario where, and we see it on the other side too, where we'll see software that is benign, but it has tendencies to, whether it's they're doing something in a different way than everyone else, and that's kind of a flag to the model. These are things that that a model is certainly going to be better to pick up on than a human, but it's definitely important to understand that. Now, we also get to see our results, right? So we can look at what a model is calling things during our kind of development stages, so we can understand more about the decisions it's going to make and whether or not they need to be corrected. So that's kind of all part of the process.
It really is that case, isn't it? Where 99.9% of stuff is just, it's clear as day. And then it's that 0.1% where you really have to work for it.
Yeah, absolutely. When you start talking about that 0.1% of files, you start looking at things that really the file itself could be a little, not quite so clear. Take things like administrative tools like PSExec or other kind of tools like a task manager that an attacker would love to have that kind of information on a system, but so would a system administrator. So those tend to be kind of those decisions that the model looks at. And, in the areas where it's not 100% clear, it tends to be files like that.
And, when it comes to machine learning, you throw a file at it, it doesn't just give you a binary classification, right? It gives you a score. It's going to give you a risk score. Somewhere in that code, it's spitting out like a number between, 1 and 100 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. My question is, can users actually select the sensitivity on their side? Can they select a scoring threshold themselves, or is that all done by you?
So a model can provide a confidence, which would be... it's important to understand whether or not that confidence has been calibrated for human consumption, or whether or not that's just the model giving it a confidence based on distance measured from that feature set. So that's an important distinction. If you had a confidence that was calibrated for human understanding, so maybe it was going to be indicative of the severity you would associate with the threat that was convicted, then you would be able to interpret it that way. And that's something that we do. So we can provide an indicator of how bad is bad, and then we do have policy decisions based on whether or not we have something that's been harshly convicted as unsafe, or whether it's just convicted as an abnormal conviction.
Yeah, I guess my question is more like, you know, for users of Silence, can they load up their console and, you know, pull a slider along and tell it how paranoid to be? You know, because there's some organizations that are more tolerant of false positives and others that are more tolerant of false negatives, right? Like, it's just, that's the way it is. You're going to have to set that threshold somewhere because nothing is perfect, right? And, you know, at least the advantage with machine learning-based stuff is you could literally have a slider in the software that tells it, you know, which side to lean on.
Yeah, you absolutely could. And we do it not necessarily through a slider, but through, we do have policies in the product that you could kind of make those decisions for.
So it's more like checkboxes. What do I care about? What sort of false negatives, what sort of false positives would I be more tolerant to than others?
Exactly. And that really is important because, like you said, all different potential customers out there will have different needs. Me, someone who's worked in security for quite some time now, I would take a false positive every day if it meant not dealing with a false negative once a year.
Yeah.
So it's, that's our outlook. Whereas, a false positive could represent an interruption in service. So, that's important too. So the ability to understand why something was convicted is very important because
I find it very funny too when, you know, internal lingo starts bleeding out because, unfairly convicted. I like this idea of judgment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to ask, like, you know, we did a pre-roll chat the other day before we did this recording. And you said that, you know, there are certainly cases that you can think of, you know, machine learning applied terribly. And I want you to be a snitch now and tell us about some terrible machine learning. What's the worst you've seen?
Well, part of the structure of machine learning models is they tend to be a little bit of a black box, even to the developers themselves. So it would be very hard for me to comment on the specifics of any individual vendor's machine learning model or the makeup of it. I can just say that there are some major differences in a sophisticated, successful machine learning model. Things like feature space that's considered in the training sets that went into the model itself. And an example of a way to avoid that would be if you were very kind of shallow in your feature space and you only considered things that maybe a human might find important, that might not be that won't be as successful as if you allow an artificial intelligence model to make that decision. So an example of what I mean is, as a human, we could say if a file is smaller, it's more likely to be malware than if it's large. And that statistically would be true. But if you were only letting features like that or more superficial features make your decisions, you would really be doing yourself a disservice in terms of, increasing your overall efficacy.
But so, do you think there are people out there actually, you know, doing machine learning that in that simplistic a way? Is that something that's actually happening?
I, without being able to give you any specific examples, I certainly do. I think there are different levels of sophistication and buy-in on the machine learning kind of world right now. So I think, I know that eventually I know everyone's going to appreciate machine learning and its potential, but I don't think everyone's there yet.
What do you think when you see other companies applying machine learning to things like network solutions and whatever? Because, binary classification is just one of those things that's the perfect use case, right? Because as far as machine learning challenges go, it's actually one of the easier ones. Unlike, some of the stuff militaries are trying to do with, video and sensors and self-driving cars. I mean, we're seeing people, that poor woman who got run over because the Uber that ran her over thought she was a plastic bag, that's where the hard stuff is. Binary classification, is it malware? Tends to be a little bit easier. Can you think of areas where machine learning is sort of being applied to security challenges where it shouldn't be? Because I'd be curious to know. You might have some thoughts on that.
Well, I honestly think that anytime you have enough data to leverage a machine learning model, you should. I think you should use machine learning to buy your groceries. I think if you
you
have
really are a true
there,
believer.
Oh, absolutely. I think, as all you need is data. If you have the data, you can use machine learning or artificial intelligence to understand the best possible course of leveraging that.
But that's not how it's working out, right? Like there's a lot of marketing, there's a lot of hype about machine learning. Not every company is kind of like Silence, which started as a machine learning based company. It was like, we are starting a company that's going to use machine learning to do X, right? And now it sort of feels like people are starting companies with a machine learning component so that they could get like VC or reinvigorate a stale business. So I'm just wondering if you can think of a few areas where at the moment in the contemporary, like current day market, it doesn't belong.
I really can't. I believe that in every industry vertical, machine learning should be leveraged, at least in some way. I can't think of any example where you wouldn't want to have access to more data and use more data to make better decisions. There's just not an example out there in my mind. And we did talk about the way that those marketing implications. There's all those things out there, but the reality is, everybody's starting to realize that it is absolutely the right direction. And even if you didn't start your concept of your security solution out based on machine learning, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be considering machine learning as the future. So while I think people are probably late to the game, I still applaud those for moving in that direction, because that's even though they may not be as far along as us, a company that kind of started that way from the beginning, it's still the right move, and it's the right move for security in general.
I've got to ask you too, like before we wrap this up, like how do we prove the efficacy of machine learning based malware classification? How can you prove, because malware testing is generally rubbish, right? It's usually very skewed towards whichever vendor commissioned the research. Mm-hmm. And we've seen silence, knife fights with other vendors over various testing results. And that's just, that's just par for the course in the AV industry. So how does one make a case that machine learning based approaches are more effective than others?
The best thing anyone can do is test for themselves. You take our solution, you take other solutions, take as many as you can get your hands on and test them. Go find samples online, go find samples on VirusTotal, things that you are 100%, just like training sets. You need to be aware that your testing set is 100% labeled correctly and test for yourself. I think that's...
But the problem is, if you're testing stuff that's already been seen in the wild, it's not much of a test, right? I mean, I figure the best test is to just, you have to run it and see, and that's a big leap of faith.
That's very true. There are some things that you can do to try and simulate a real-world testing environment. Like one of the good ways to do that is an out-of-date test. If you were to take our product and take other products and not allow them to be updated for a certain length of time and then check performance, that's a way to kind of simulate newly seen threats, because that version of the product that you're testing has not seen them. And that's what's called like an out-of-date or a holiday test. And that's an excellent way to measure your security solution against threats that it has not come in contact yet, to represent a point forward for threats that could be seen, if that makes sense. We've taken models that are 3 years old and they've been able to predict attacks like WannaCry.
WannaCry is a pretty crappy example, because that was like the sloppiest constructed malware I think I've ever seen in my career. Nice try, Chris.
Hey, it's amazing how many times that you don't have to write something sophisticated for it to work. Mm. So it's, all it's got to do is work. So the reasons of why it works to the malware author and to the victim aren't important. It's whether or not it did. So WannaCry, it was not the most sophisticated or not the most well put together attack, but it worked for a reason that users were deficient in a certain form of their protection. So that's an example of one that's easy to spot. Machine learning tends to be strong in the case of new threats, because it's really based on the actual functionality of the threat, not whether or not we've seen it before. So that's definitely a strength area for machine learning is understanding, it really does not have to have seen these threats before. And that's really the base difference, is whether or not I can make a decision on the spot or whether or not a decision already had to have been made. And if you're using a signature, a decision already had to have been made and you already had to have been seen.
I think that's the key difference, right? Is that like other, and they are effective too. Other anti-malware approaches might be using heuristics to stop certain behaviors once something's kind of executing and whatever. And it might not necessarily know at the time of execution that something is bad, but then they catch it as it's doing its thing. Where I think with silence, it's more, it's a different approach because you're actually doing the classification before execution, right?
Exactly. And that's the piece. If you detect something post execution, it's better than not detecting it at all, but you've still left your customer, your user vulnerable. And so our thought is, in our approach at Cylance, is that you need to prevent the threats before they're real. And you know, machine learning seems to be the only way to do it.
Christopher Sestito, thank you very much for joining us to give us a sermon, really, on machine learning and why you're a true believer. It's been very interesting. Thank you very much.
Patrick, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That was Chris Tito Sestito there. Big thanks to him for that. And you can check out Cylance, or Cylance, however you want to say it, at cylance.com. And yeah, I think they are a good one to have in your eval mix. Like any technology, it's horses for courses, but they are definitely worth a look. And that is it for this edition of Soapbox. I'll be back next week with a weekly show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.